Our next presentation is from Andrew Justice, Music Librarian for Audio and Digital Services at the University of North Texas. The name of the presentation is The Duke of Denton, Rhodes Baker's Ellington Collection at the University of North Texas. Andrew has a BA for music from Oregon State, an MM from Oregon, and an MLS from Syracuse. He spent 3 years at the Cornell Music Library. He's currently managing a collection of nearly 1 million recordings and directing print and media digitization from the special collections at the Music Library at the University of North Texas. He's also a Baroque violinist, played with groups in Texas and the Northeast and the West Coast. Let's welcome Andrew.
Good afternoon. Let's get logged in here. Does that look all right? In the late 1960s, the University of North Texas, then known as North Texas State University, purchased a collection of Duke Ellington recordings from the estate of Houston attorney Rhodes Baker, and that's Baker in the picture with Ellington. We know very little of the details of this acquisition, as it took place before Morris Martin became head music librarian, and the original documentation appears to be lost, at least to the music library. In any event, this presentation will describe the collection as it is today, highlight some specific attributes, share several audio examples, and discuss plans for future preservation and access of what I hope to show is a very unique assortment of Ellington's recorded legacy. The Rhodes Baker collection contains 17 commercial 45s, 36 air shots on 10-inch glass base lacquer transcription discs, 65 non-commercial 12-inch records, and these are studio, broadcast, and transcription discs, 89 commercial 12-inch LPs, and that's one of my favorite covers ever, 568 commercial 10-inch 78s, and a separate group of what Rhodes Baker called his Ellingtonians, featuring members of the different orchestras containing 576 78s and commercial LPs. In addition to this, there are 88 reel-to-reel tapes featuring live performances, broadcasts, and studio sessions. The legend concerning this collection is that there are many never-before-released recordings contained therein. Baker compiled his own catalogs of non-commercial items in the collection to varying degrees of accuracy. Over the past 30-some years, several attempts have been made to better describe the collection, but ever-expanding Ellington releases and discographies, like Timner and Lord, are beginning to suggest that the number of truly unique items in the collection will dwindle. Before he left UNT, Jonathan Thorne transferred all of the air shots in our sound preservation studio. And about 6 months ago, I found an unmarked box of what turned out to be several of the reels transferred to RDAT or PCM F1 VHS tapes. And we have no idea of when those transfers happen, but they probably happened in-house because they're on the same kind of RDATs that all of our College of Music recordings are from the 80s to the early 90s. So we transferred the RDATs, and we're happy to find out that they came out very clean. Now, I should note here that our research and organization of this collection is still very much in progress and will probably continue at least for a year or two. Fortunately, right now, one of our graduate library assistants is a jazz guitarist who is also working on her Master's of Library Science degree at UNT, so she is proving to be somewhat indispensable with this project. Hence, what follows is a picture of where we are now and then where we'd like to go. Starting with the air shots. This is an excerpt of Body and Soul from June 23, 1945 at the Palace Theater in Akron, Ohio, and it was originally released by the Department of the Treasury to help sell war bonds. Thank you. Here is Frantic Fantasy from May 1st, 1945 in New York City, and this recording is unreleased, according to Lord. This is back home in Indiana on June 16th, 1945, at Franklin Gardens in Evansville, Indiana. And while it's not a Duke original, it is the source of the chord progression for Donnelly. Now moving to the reels, here is an excerpt of Cottontail featuring Ben Webster from November 13th, 1948 at Carnegie Hall. This was released on Vintage Classics in 1991, but is now rather difficult to find. Thank you. Two extracts from an interview. This tape is really interesting. We're not sure of the date of when this happened, but apparently the orchestra did a church service with readings and prayers and Ellington's music being performed live all throughout. It was broadcast on CBS. We think it was done at the Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York. And I have two interview extracts that were broadcast before the actual service. And then the service has stuff like a choir singing along with the orchestra and naming books of the New Testament, and there's a drum solo, and they're kind of sitting here going, Leviticus, Numbers. And there's, like, all this hot stuff going on in the background. It's a really interesting recording, and like everything else in the collection, we're trying to figure out what the hell it is. But these two interview bits were too good not to include in the presentation.
For a moment, let's move on now. I'm sort of creeping up, so to speak, to the religious aspect, because I can't get it out of my mind. I'm just this conservative doctor and old-fashioned, that this is in a church, and that certain things belong in a church, and I have to be taught that some other things also belong in a church, you know, because I know it to be true, but it's hard to take, I guess because of the way I was raised. But I'm talking about the effect on the people now. You said there weren't any disruptions or any bad incidents, but I'm thinking of something a little bit deeper than that. For example, who came?
All kinds of people. We wondered. We had young people there, and if you look at this picture, you can see they're older, mature people.
In the door.
Yes, this is standing outside in bitter cold weather, waiting to get in.
Well-dressed. It was a festive occasion, holiday season.
Sophisticated people.
I'm looking at that, and I'm a little surprised as I saw it that there weren't, Mr. Russell, more young people. I would think it'd be a lot of youngsters.
There were more young people at the midnight concert, but the whole program attracted primarily middle-aged couples, responsible citizens who wanted to explore this new avenue of religious expression.
What about Negroes? I would think you'd have preponderance of Negroes, to
By
put
no
it
means.
Bluntly to you. Really?
We had some.
A goodly number,
but people even accused us of having the concert primarily to attract Negroes to our church.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this didn't happen.
We approached in the true integration spirit. Let a man come, whoever he is, if he's interested.
He's got $2.
Yeah, I like that one.
I would comment right here from my own thinking, however, that there's only one Duke Ellington. This may have had something to do with it, eh?
Yes, some people said
not every jazz combo.
No, and we didn't intend that. This doesn't mean that now on we have a drum and a beat and everything. This was a man who made his offering through his talent.
You see, this reference of what would Christ think of this if he were to come into the church? Well, of course, he wouldn't recognize the music, let's face it, would he?
Let me tell you something. If I were to put on a concert of the music Jesus listened to and liked, I'm sure that my church people wouldn't approve of it. It would be oriental. Clapping and timbrel and dancing. They would say this is shocking. And this is what has bothered me. People are prejudging Christ and church on their cultural terms rather than his.
There's a lot of interesting moments in that interview. The last excerpt that I have for you is the first public performance of Lush Life from the 1948 Carnegie Hall concert.
And now I'd like to introduce our writing and arranging companion, who we've been so much indebted to for quite a period, for contributing so much of the high spots of our performances, particularly in the writing. I'd like to, at this time, present Billy Strayhorn. course, you know, Billy Strayhorn wrote our radio theme, Take the A-Train. And now, the purpose, of course, of him appearing on tonight's program, which is a little extra added and extra added thought, I should say, is that I'd like for him to have Kay Davis to play, rather, for Kay Davis to introduce a new tune of his called Lush Life. Kay Davis.
So what happens next with the collection? Well, first, we're going to complete an online finding aid for it, which accurately describes all of the recordings. This, of course, requires in-depth research, and I'd say we're about two-thirds of the way there at this point. Incidentally, you see tapes that don't match what it says you're hearing or what I'm saying you're hearing, and actually, those did come from those tapes. So to steal from the earlier presentation, the collection is a bit of a mess from here at certain junctures. Obviously, the preservation of the reels and the discs that have not been widely released is of the utmost importance to us, and we plan to apply for grant funding to do that, both in-house and off-site, after we identify which recording should get priority for this. And then lastly, there's the question of access. Having non-circulating CDs for in-house listening in our audio center is an easy solution, but we also want to explore the possibility of offering recordings in an online streaming format, probably on the same platform as our online College of Music recordings project, if you are familiar with that, which allows us to stream recordings using an open source music player and control access to library-only, campus-only, university community-only, or open access. For this option, we will have to identify the copyright limitations for each recording and performance and dialogue with the Ellington Foundation to see what they will and won't allow. I am indebted to Maristela Feustel, our graduate library assistant, for her knowledge and diligence in tracking down the information shared in this presentation, as well as what will be represented online. Thank you.
We have 5 minutes for questions for Andrew.
Yes. You can come find me if you don't want to ask something in front of everybody.
No, I got one.
Oh, yes.
I was just wondering if you had any more information you could share with us about the church service broadcast.
I wish I did.
So you think it was on CBS?
It was broadcast on CBS. We did a rundown of what's listed on the recording, what actually happens, and CBS call letters are given. And then,
are you sure it's radio? That picture, and it would almost sound like they expected the audience to be able to see.
You know, actually, I'm not sure that it's radio. So I think it's something that we probably assumed. Yeah, that's entirely possible, too.
Just interesting.
Yeah.
Based on your description, I think it's Ellington's second sacred concert.
Okay.
Okay. It's the second sacred concert. So.
And you think is that like in the 60s? Because we were trying to... Yeah, we were trying to gauge from the style of the music that was being played on it, and it sounds very kind of 60s campish.
Late 60s.
Yeah.
Do you know if it was televised? Well, there were all of the sacred, did three sacred things. They were all premiered in churches. Some
right.
Given multiple presentations, but no, offhand, I don't know if it was televised.
I'm Wendy Shea, and I'm from the Archive Center. Ellington and Strayhorn and their relationship, and it features Take the A Train, Handwritten, and I forget what else. But there's also, you could take the concert in Vancouver, you did a portion of one, and there's actually an interesting CBC television show that has a tiny bit of Ellington playing on this like wacko, hippie kind of CBC television show.
Yes, sir.
At which stage was that concert overmodulated? And secondly, are there other copies in other hands of that?
I don't know the answer to the second question. And to be honest with you, with the first question, I discovered this box of reels transferred to RDAT, and I have no idea when it happened or who did it. And so, until we actually get a chance to go back to the original reels and compare, which. The reels are in various states of disarray, quality-wise, and so we're going to have to, when we get the funding and we're at that point making that decision, we can only do so much in-house, we're going to have to send some of them away.
Yeah, because wouldn't it be important to find out if there are other copies available that are in much better condition?
Yes, absolutely. Right. Just then. Sure.
Yeah, have you cross-checked your holdings with the Jerry Valburn collection?
Not yet. It's on the list of things to do.
Do you know if he knew Jerry Valburn?
I don't. I don't profess to be an Ellington specialist at all. I just got lucky enough to have this collection in a room across the hall from mine. They did know one another. Okay.
Then I would say Jerry probably has everything that's in this collection.
Probably.
Knowing Jerry.
Right. That's kind of what I was getting at. Is I want to figure out what we actually have before we go through the process of transferring these things. Seth?
Let me just ask you something about that last selection.
Yes.
Did you play it back with the CCIR curve, since that was the tape that came from? Where was it, Sweden?
I believe that tape came from Sweden. Yes,
and.
Jonathan probably did not do any processing. No, him.
Oh,
whoever made the tape. Again, I've got these boxes of tapes. They're labeled to different degrees. You know, Rhodes Baker labeled some stuff, but the adhesive is soaking through into the paper. You saw the one that I scanned. You can barely make out the titles. That's one of the more legible ones. The other ones, I'm not quite sure, you know, what the genealogy is on this.
For all of you, a colleague of mine, Stephen Lasker, is the Ellington expert out in California.
Right. That's a great suggestion. One more question, sir.
I can offer you a little bit of insight on some of the stuff that was doomed out there, the random boxes. I'm a North Texas graduate.
Oh.
Most of those transfers were done by student employees.
That's what we were afraid of, yeah.
Do no harm to the recording.
Right.
Put it in and do it.
As is.
Do not do any EQ adjustments.
Sure.
At all. So that's why a lot of it sounds the way it sounds.
Yeah, and that's what I assumed, too. I didn't, you know.
And most of the guys that were doing it were happy to be doing it for the $4 an hour that they were getting the work stuff.
Yeah. These were done when, you said?
Graduated in 98.
Okay.
I didn't touch any of the Ellington stuff myself. I did a lot of the jazz concerts, One Clock Ensemble.
Right.
The guest artists, the Peter Erskine tapes.
Yeah, I got a presentation on those, too, somewhere.
And anything that was done with jazz singers, that's probably got my name on it.
Okay, cool. We should talk. Okay. Thanks very much.
Well, let's thank Andrew again.